You are listening to KBBI, and you are tuned to The Coffee Table. I'm your host, Aaron Bolton, and today we're talking about salmon, particularly about the Alaska Humanities Forum's Salmon Fellows Program. And in the studio with me, I have one of 16 fellows and commercial fisherman, Katie Birch. So thanks for joining us, Katie. And I also have program coordinator of the Gulf Watch Alaska Program and fellow salmon fellow, Donna Adderhold, is also in the studio. Thanks for joining us as well. And on the line, we have the director of the Alaska Humanities Forum, Cameron Perez-Verdia. Thanks for joining us as well. And you can join today's conversation by calling 235-7721 or email us at info@kbbi.org. Please include your name if you were emailing your question in. And I would also like to add, we've received a few questions via Facebook in recent weeks, and some of those have gone unanswered. So please email us any questions you want answered on air. Again, to info@kbbi.org to make sure we get them while we're here in the studio. And Cameron, I want to start with you. Can you just give us a little background on the Salmon Fellows Program, what it is, how it came to be, and what the Humanities Forum hopes it will accomplish?
Sure. Well, first, thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on your show. I think if it's okay with you, I'll just give a little background about the Alaska Humanities Forum, because I think that'll give us a little context for this program. The Alaska Humanities Forum, many people have heard of it, but oftentimes folks don't know exactly what it is that we do. And the organization was founded in 1972, and it's really about bringing Alaskans together to think critically and to talk across perspectives, values, backgrounds about things that really matter. We're a nonprofit organization. We're nonpartisan. And we represent one of the 56 state and territorial councils supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities. And we're really dedicated to strengthening and connecting communities across Alaska using the humanities. And when we think of the humanities, we think of literature and storytelling and art and history and music and philosophy and our shared heritage. So what we do is we create space for Alaskans to share their stories and their ideas and experiences so that maybe they can be better understand each other. And ultimately, the purpose of our organization is that communities are stronger and healthier places for us to live. And so in that context, the Salmon Fellows is really falls in line with what we do. And the way that we often think of the Salmon Fellows program is that it's about salmon, but it's really about a lot more than that, because it's an opportunity to bring really diverse people together to have the conversations that we need to be having about something that we all value. And so salmon, for us, you know, it's a defining factor in the culture of Alaska. It's something that we all have in common. But salmon, and I think it's our third largest industry in Alaska, it's also a flashpoint for conflict over very difficult issues that involve racial justice, urban-rural divide, and balancing ideas of sustainability against resource development. So what we have done is we have worked with a number of partner organizations and put this program together. And essentially, the way that it works is that we started out with 16 fellows, about 100 people applied, and 16 were chosen. And they were chosen specifically because of their diversity, representing different areas of Alaska and representing many different perspectives around salmon, so subsistence and commercial and sport and policy and just a variety of very different areas. And they were brought together over the period of 18 months. And during that 18-month period, they come together four times for about 5 or 6 days in different communities in Alaska, and they can convene, and they build relationships, they learn about each other, and they begin to have difficult conversations about all the things surrounding salmon. And then eventually they develop projects, and the projects are group projects. Each of the cohorts have four or five projects that they work on. And those projects are really about individual learning for themselves. They're about really expanding and connecting this network, but ultimately they're about changing a system, the system within Alaska, and making it more equitable and sustainable. So that's kind of the idea behind it, and we are now in our second cohort, and that cohort is now selected their projects, and they're underway and beginning to work.
Well, great. And Donna and Katie, I want to get to you guys and kind of give a sense of your backgrounds, because as Cameron described, everyone's kind of coming at this from different perspectives. Donna, why don't we start with you, if you want to give a little bit of background about yourself and kind of what attracted you to this program and kind of how you fit into all this.
Well, I'm can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I'm a research scientist is my background. Actually started in waterfowl. And my connection to salmon is really through the regulatory process, through writing environmental impact statements and environmental assessments in places around the state that deal with fish passage issues or other salmon-related topics. And I heard about the Salmon Fellows Program, and I don't know, something just clicked, and I said, I think I have to do that. I'm not sure why, but I got to do it, and it's been, so far, very rewarding.
Great. And Katie, if you want to give a little bit of background about yourself and also what made you attracted to the program.
Yeah, well, I came to Alaska as a young woman and got involved with commercial fishing off the bat. And then my husband and I moved to Homer when our kids were small, and enjoyed being a mom, and then moved into, in the winters when we weren't fishing, moved into working with Ketchumek Bay Research Reserve, doing environmental education and some other scientific work. And so I was I was kind of hesitantly attracted to this program because my strong suit is not sitting in meetings and talking, and I get kind of frustrated with that process. I just want to go do something. But my passion for salmon and all, you know, over the years, over 30 years of commercial fishing and being interested in the science end of things too, I'd really learned a lot about salmon, and I began to get quite concerned about whether Alaska would be able to hang on to salmon in a way that nowhere else in the world has been able to do. And I began to get concerned, and you know, there's a lot of different ways you can attack that problem, but when I heard about the Salmon Fellows, even though it did seemed like it was going to be a lot of talking and a lot of meetings, I thought that there was some hope in that it seemed like they were kind of getting down to the nut of the issue. So that's why I jumped in.
Yeah. And Cameron, I mean, who are some of these other fellows in this second cohort? You mentioned that they're from all over the state, rural, urban. If you can kind of give a kind of a general rundown of kind of who are some of these fellows.
Sure, and I would encourage people who want to learn more about the fellows and the program to go to our website. It's akhf.org, Alaska Humanities Forum, and it actually has bios and information about all the fellows and where they're from and their background that sort of thing. So the second cohort is again a real mixture of people who come from a commercial fishing background, sport, policymakers, folks who work in sort of setting policy around fish, and people that are advocates. We have environmentalists. We have all kinds of folks. I don't know if you want me to go through. I can name folks if you want me to, but they're all on our website, and they also really range from different regions in Alaska. We have folks who are from the interior, people who are far out west, lots of folks who are from south central, and so it really is a nice cross section of people who come to this from very different points of view.
Yeah, and if you want to kind of give an idea, you mentioned projects, but are there other things that SAM fellows are expected to do or that are involved in? I know Katie and Donna both mentioned a lot of conversations, and you mentioned some get-togethers throughout the year. But aside from the projects, what are SAM fellows expected to do during their time?
So as I mentioned, there are four in-person gatherings, and those are often done in communities that are different from each other. So we've had gatherings in Igiagig, we've had gatherings in Kenai, in Kodiak, in Anchorage, and we're really trying to create the opportunity for them to not only come together and to meet, but to actually interact with those communities. And so when they come to those gatherings, they do sit in a room and they do have lots of conversations, but they also get out into the community and invite the community into their space as well, so they can talk to people and learn about what the challenges and issues are in those communities. So in between all of those gatherings, they are meeting via webinars fairly frequently, and they're continuing the conversations that they started when they were in their convenings. They're also, now that they're grouped up in teams, those teams are meeting and collaborating and beginning to think about the projects that they're working on. So then there's lots of communication through email and through phone and those kinds of things. But they're also, now that they have really launched, they're going out into the community and talking to policymakers and talking to people who are involved in salmon. And so the idea is that they begin to become really engaged in this system, and that they are catalysts for both learning and for positive change.
And Donna and Katie, you guys have been involved in these conversations. I mean, what have they been like, and what have you guys been talking about? I mean, whoever wants to take that first. Go ahead, Katie.
Well, I think the most refreshing thing, I mean, you know, if you're interested in salmon and Homer, there's no lack of conversations you can get into, right? But what I found is, you know, I felt like for the last 10 years, I'm just having the same conversation over and over again with people I know. And usually we all agree, you know? And so it's like, you know, I just got sick of my own thoughts, basically. It's like I wasn't moving forward with any new ideas, and I was sure I was right about what I thought. And so this gives the opportunity to really find out other perspectives and find out, oh, that's why that happens, you know? And actually, you know, sometimes you get into an interesting conversation at a coffee shop, but you got to get up and go to work, or, you know, it's just like a really nice opportunity to meet people from totally different backgrounds. They're viewing salmon in a completely different way. And you have to sit down and talk about it, which I found is, I have more patience for that than I thought, because the conversations have been amazing and really interesting, and I feel like I'm learning from them. It's not like hearing the tape recorder over and over again, you know?
Yeah, and do these conversations kind of set it up in a way that they're not adversaries that they otherwise might be in a different setting?
Yeah, I think the Humanities Forum, I didn't really know anything about before this. They're kind of magicians at getting... They know how to get people to bond, and, like, you know, they are very good at facilitating conversation and having activities. And so that they got us to a place where we could have very respectful discussions and very quickly, I feel. And so that, you know, just out on the street, that doesn't happen. And so we kind of got down to the root issues much more quickly. And probably part of that is, you know, the selection process, who they chose to be in the fellows.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the toughest topics you've had to discuss so far?
Well, you know, I just want to stick on the salmon issue, but all these people issues keep coming up. And so I think the toughest ones are talking about equity, you know, like who gets the salmon and who's left out, and who's holding the power, and how does this whole system work? And, you know, just fairness issues have come up. And I think that's been the toughest one for me. Donna, you can take it from here.
Yeah, I think, you know, a big part of it is how you ask questions and having a question where each person can talk about their own personal experience. And, you know, so you don't get into this, well, you said this and you did that. It's really, this is how I felt, or this is what it meant to me. And it allows you to really sit back and go, wow, I'd never thought about it that way. And for me, a number of our conversations have been uncomfortable, and I think that that's by design, because you really learn a lot more when you're sitting in a place of discomfort. One of the hardest conversations that I think we've had as a group was on racial equity, and the conversation went to a place that I certainly didn't expect. It was very revealing, I think, for a number of us, and my body was vibrating for about 24 hours after we had that conversation. It was really impactful.
And, you know, and now you guys are moving on to projects, but I assume that these conversations are winding and cover a whole number of projects. Does it feel like there's just so much that you can't get to? Has it been hard to kind of hone your ideas, essentially, of what you want to tackle in this program? I don't know who might want to take that one, but...
Yeah, they had a process that we had to follow in order to choose which projects. And, you know, like I say, we're all coming from different perspectives. And we'd spent quite a bit of time talking about, there's this thing called systems change. It's a really hard thing to explain, but I'm not sure I really get it. But it's a way of looking at problems and trying to kind of systematically break it down, and so that you have a strategic way to tackle it. So we've been mucking around with that a bit. And so the process of picking the projects, we're trying to get to the root issues. You know, so you could pick a project that was fairly superficial and might change something, but we're really trying to get down to, well, really, what are the root issues and how can we work on those? And so just to give you one of the small parts of how we had to choose a project. So you come up with your project and there's 16 people sitting around, and everyone puts their projects up on the board, and yours does not move forward unless someone else besides you votes for it. So that's just, you know, part of how we moved it down through certain things. And then, so really, I think a lot of the projects melded and turned into different things than we initially thought, but it's kind of with the input of other people.
Yeah, and this is Cameron. I just want to add that that... You know, one of the things, I was just at a meeting recently, and someone said, you know, it's the time for talk is over. We need to stop talking about this stuff, and we need to do something. We just need to do something. And I think, and that for me struck me, because I thought, I understand the desire to make a change, just to get out there and do something about it. But the reality from our perspective is that real change comes when we begin to shift the way that we think, when we begin to really think about other people's worldview. And that real significant long-term sustainable change happens when we begin to address the human problems, because at the root of many of the problems that we find are people. And so that's the uncomfortable stuff. That's the tough stuff that we sometimes want to avoid and just go do something. So that's a lot of what this is about. It's about really beginning to shift the way we think, but it's also about really opening our eyes to very different worldviews, and that maybe we're wrong, you know. And so anyway, that is a big piece of it, and then it allows us to go out and do something, but do it in a very sort of thoughtful and intentional and potentially impactful way.
And you know, and you mentioned projects, and I think we're going to dive into your individual projects in more detail a little bit later, and I'll ask Cameron to describe some of these other projects that are happening. But Donna, do you maybe want to start and kind of just give a short overview of what you're working on right now?
Yeah, so I'm working with two other women in the Salmon Fellows program, and our project is called Salmon Parkas. And which you're like, okay, that's an interesting name. The name actually comes from an Inupiat story of a hunter who wants to become a better hunter, and so he goes and puts on the parka of the different animals that he hunts to gain the perspective of that animal and know that animal better so that he can be a better and more ethical hunter. And so we're taking that to a kind of a different level and saying, well, what if we gather people from different parts of the salmon system, again, commercial fishermen, sports fishermen, decision makers, subsistence fishermen, whoever it is, and bring them into a room together often these people would be sitting in adversarial positions or in positions of inequity, and, get them into a conversation somehow related to salmon issues, but also related to their personal experience, and allow these people to have a conversation and change the relationship that they have with each other, so that at the next Board of Fish meeting, instead of coming out in an adversarial position, they might actually talk to each other and say, "Hey, what did you think of this proposal? Yeah, I felt the same way. I understand your position. That's really interesting. How could we do this differently?" So just helping people change their relationships to each other.
All right. And Katie, if you want to give a short rundown of what you're working on.
Okay, ours is called Actor Map Roadshow. We haven't really determined the title yet, but we're taking it on the road, whatever we do. But I got sucked into another mushy talking kind of project again. But I just want to go do something, like Cameron said. But anyway, we're looking at the salmon people system, which is basically just all the players that are dealing with salmon in Alaska. So anyone has anything to do with salmon in Alaska is part of the system, right? So we're looking at that, and we're looking at the different groups that everyone's familiar with, subsistence, government, all that, sport, commercial, all that. And we're going to ask people, this is an activity that we did as a group, and it's not something we made up, it's something that people do called actor mapping. So we're just going to have a small group, and you ask them to place all the players, like Board of Fish, or the Gear Shed, or Fish and Game, like all these little actors, you place them on this map where you think they fit. What's their power of influence? Where do they fit in this map? And then the question is, if you went to different groups, would they map this whole system differently? And it's kind of a cool activity. You can do this in like an hour and a half or 2 hours. So my two team members and I are going to try and take this activity to different sectors, like industry. Maybe we'll meet with 8 oil and gas people and have them map the salmon system how they see it, and then go to conservation people or go to tribals entities. So we're going to it's kind of a data analysis. We're just, gathering, and then we're going to analyze how everyone looked at the system and see if we can find any patterns, and find part of the end of the activity. You try and identify communication pathways that are blocked, open, or possible. So we're going to try and end our project by presenting this data in a way that people can use it to direct their own projects. So.
Right.
Yeah, and I can just add one thing on that one, because it's a we did do the activity, and a big piece of it is that if you can visualize this map, in the center of the map is the sort of center of influence. So there are different sort of sectors that you can think of, corporations and subsistence, tribal, these kinds of things. But you also ask people to place all the different players or actors within the system. The closer they are to the center, the more influence you believe they have on the system. And so what you get when you see the end of it is you get a real visual representation of who's involved, what people think that their level of influence or power is, what the relationships between those players are, and you get a real view of where the influence is, where the influence is not, and what the real breakdowns are, because then it allows you to see this very difficult, complex system in a little bit clearer way.
Great. Yeah, and Cameron, can you just give a short rundown of some of the other projects that are happening this time around?
Sure. You heard a little bit about the system map or the actor map road show, and you heard about Salmon Parkas. There's another project that's being led by Toby Sullivan and Matt Varner and Peter Bangs, and it's a project that was initially inspired by the reading of the book The King of Fish. And if the listeners have not read that book, I would really encourage them to do it. And it tells the story of the global story regarding the historical threats to and the loss of wild salmon. And the concept of this project, and one thing I will say about these projects is they are still early, and they're all in sort of concept phase at this point. The first cohort's projects are completed, and so those went through a lot of sort of changes to get to their final project. But this project, it's called the Salmon People Podcast, and it's an opportunity to sort of present the story of Alaska salmon, its history, cultures, current challenges, and to call awareness to it. And the story would be told by Alaskans across the state via a series of podcasts and interviews with accompanying video. So that one is the Salmon People Podcast. There's also a project called Salmon Unlimited. And the Salmon Unlimited team sees a need for a quote, big tent convening open to all Alaskans who share an interest and passion for the future of salmon, similar to that of an affinity group like Ducks Unlimited. And that model really appeals to this group because it's an inclusive membership which crosses economic, political, cultural boundaries and focuses on conservation for the future. And the last one is Salmon Through My Eyes, and this is a storytelling project across generations. So the central idea of many cultures in Alaska, from Alaska natives to commercial fish fishermen, how stories are told from our young to our older, and the stories serve to entertain us and also to transmit cultural practices, history, data, and more. The team believes that critical information surrounding Alaska salmon may be lost as elders pass on, and it's now more important than ever to collect and preserve Alaska salmon stories so that the knowledge within these stories may help to build equity and sustainability.
Great. And you know, and I want to talk about some of the big ideas that I've been talking to both Donna and Katie, but just hearing some of those other projects, it seemed to share a lot of these big ideas. And Katie, you kind of described it a little bit, but I want to start with the Salmon People system. I mean, is it essentially just everyone that's involved? And it sounds a little bit bigger than you would think, that maybe some folks are involved in this system that might not even know it, really. And I don't know, Donna, I don't know if you want to kind of take that one and kind of describe a little bit more about what is this idea of a Salmon People system.
Yeah, I think you described it fairly well. It's everybody who intersects with salmon in some way. And, you know, Cameron would argue with me because we've had this discussion, but I would argue that just about everybody in Alaska is touched by salmon in some way. And so we're all to some degree part of the Salmon People system. I mean, even if you live in Anchorage and don't fish, you might live next to an anadromous fish stream. You may not even know it's anadromous. And so, you know, I had an individual project this summer where I was interviewing property owners and just wanting to know where those conversations would take me. And they took me in a direction I really didn't expect to go, and learned about a stream right outside of Homer that doesn't even have a name on a map, but it's Ruby Creek. It used to be a salmon stream, and because of the Sterling Highway being built along it and Diamond Ridge Road intersecting with it, that stream is barely a stream anymore and no longer holds salmon. So, you know, somebody wants to build a road, they may not even know that they're building their driveway or a road across a salmon rearing stream because it's such a tiny stream. So I really kind of went off on a tangent there, but it really is to say, I think that there are, you know, there's people who definitely their life is salmon. They live salmon every day. Their career is based around salmon. Their livelihood is based around salmon. And then there's other people who, you know, buy salmon at the grocery store for dinner and don't really understand what their relationship is.
Sure. And Cameron, I don't know if you want to jump in on this. I mean, I'm just kind of curious to see what your perspective on the salmon people system, because it sounds like, you know, everyone's going to kind of think about this a little bit differently.
Oh, I think so. I think that's really, really true. And something that's really important for your listeners to know is that you know, these conversations we're having they're about salmon, but they're also about jobs. They're about our economy. They're about racial equity. They're about resource development. They're about the things that matter within our state, and we are really using salmon as a way to tackle people problems. And so it is about specifically a fish, but it's really about us as people and how we're going to solve these really wicked, challenging, complex problems that we face. And so the salmon people system is a way to sort of say, we all have, and I think it's true, we all have a link. That's why salmon is such a powerful thing, because we all connect to it in some way. And most people in Alaska care deeply about salmon, but often for different reasons, and have a different relationship. And so the system is a way to think about all of us and how we connect, and to have a better sense of where we can find common ground, where the real serious breakdowns are, and how we can move forward and begin to address the really challenging problems that we have.
And what is the value of getting folks to think about the salmon people system? Because it sounds like most of your projects are getting people to think about this. And so what is the value of getting folks to really think about this as a system and them being a part of it?
Well, so I think the awareness is huge for people to really see that. I think the second, and I'll use a story to explain this. We have in our first cohort, we had two fellows. One, she's a subsistence fisherman from rural Alaska, and he is a sport fisherman from Southeast. And she told a story of growing up. She's Yupik, and that in her language, sport fishing. The actual translation of that word means people that play with fish, and that it is a really disrespectful way of being around fish, and that so that's how she grew up, thinking that these people were really not being respectful to fish. And when they met and they talked and they actually began to understand that he loves fishing, it's a huge part of his family. His dad did it, his dad did it, and his dad did it, and it's a big part of their culture and their way of life. And it's and he wants his son to be involved. And he sees fishing the way he does as a being a very respectful way of interacting with the earth. And so they actually found common ground, and were able to being able to work on a project together, because ultimately they want to make sure that fish are here for many years to come. So what I would say is that the value of having people have these conversations is not only their own awareness, but to be able to see the possibilities through someone else's eyes, and that will translate, I think, in better decisions that are being made for our state, better policy decisions. A breakdown of these roadblocks, these intractable conversations that you've heard about, that we will actually be able to advance and make some positive growth and progress on things that we care about.
And we have a caller in line, and we'll get to that caller in just a second. But Katie, you were going to jump in on this idea of the value of of people thinking about the salmon people system and kind of what that might do.
Yeah, and I guess I'm kind of rooting for the salmon in this thing. I like people too, but I'm, you know, I like salmon. But, and I want to keep them around. And so I think, you know, like, what's the value of, you know, people have got other stuff to do with their day, right? Not everyone's going to sit around and talk about salmon or thinking about salmon. They got other, everyone's got different values and different things going on. But I think that when I read that book, King of Fish, what happened to me or one of the things I thought about was, you know, all these places that have lost their salmon runs, I don't think they meant to. Like, they didn't even know it was happening. Like, you know, it's not like they were like evil people and they were trying to kill salmon. They were just going about their life. Like, we're all going to go about our life today doing their thing. And, but, you know, hopefully we can learn from history. And so if we can get people to talk about a little bit and look at, like, if we lose our salmon, that might be inevitable. I don't know. But let's at least be aware that what are we doing? You know, if we're making a choice, let's be aware of that choice. Let's talk about that. Let's just not stumble down the same pathway and then in a generation look back and go, oh shoot, we did what everyone else did, you know. That's so that's just what I was gonna say.
Great. And let me get Bob, you are on the coffee table. Go ahead with your question.
Great, thanks so much. Yeah, thanks for having the show. I think it's super important. Appreciate the guests being on here. And when I hear Katie talking about the King of Fish, I think she's absolutely right. You know, when you read the book, you recognize it wasn't just neglect that led to the demise of salmon in other places in the world, but it was a deliberate neglect. It was, we knew what we were doing was wrong, and we still did it, and it wasn't, you know, some malicious intent. It's just kind of human nature, and we're seeing that very same thing here. And I guess the question I want to ask is about our local community. And, you know, we recognize our salmon landscape. You talked about Ruby Creek there and road building and things like that, but really every cut in our salmon landscape has some effect, whether we can measure it or not. And one of the things my organization, Cooking Lake Keeper, has been looking at for a long time has been gravel mining around our salmon systems on the lower part of the Kenai Peninsula. And, of course, gravel is super important for, you know, our driveways, our roads, our economy. It's been around for a long time. But increasingly, when we look at the patterns of gravel development around our systems, they're unsustainable, and we really don't have a permitting system in place that recognizes the value of salmon. So my question is, how do we develop some type of salmon-safe gravel extraction? How do we look at gravel extraction through the lens of protecting our salmon? Because right now, the Kenai Peninsula Borough has a Material Sites Task Force, which I believe is meeting in its last meeting before it develops some new rules today. And I think it'd be very valuable to be able to say, you know, we obviously need gravel, but we want to protect our salmon. What would that look like?
Artie, well, thanks for your question, Bob. And so I don't know who might want to take that on. I don't know. And we were talking a little bit about this before the program about how we might get questions about specific issues. But you guys are thinking about this as a value to bring that perspective to a conversation.
Yeah, and I think that that's, I mean, that the, and I, you know, in my comments was saying, you know, that you know, we need to have the conversations. I also think we need to do things too. I think that that's where, that's what having the conversation allows. But having a space to hear what the caller is talking about and talking about this dilemma, this, you know, that we need gravel, and it's something that's part of our community and part of our world, but we also it's not something that from his perspective is sustainable. That's the kind of conversations that I want to have, and I certainly don't have the answer to it, but I appreciate the caller and I appreciate the challenge.
And Katie, you were going to jump in on this.
Yeah, I guess one of the things I learned from that King of Fish book about the history of other places that lost salmon was the two big points I got out of the book was the main reasons people lost their salmon was lack of political will. Like no elected official wants to tell people they can't do something to save salmon. And then the other one is a death by a thousand cuts. And I feel like this gravel pit issue, I don't really know much about what's going on with the gravel right now, but it's obviously one of the 1,000 cuts. You know, it's like, oh, this project isn't going to affect it too much. And then everything adds up, right? So And, you know, I think the people of Alaska have to decide, you know, what at what cost, you know, what are they willing to sacrifice? But I think that's my point is, if we're going to do that, let's do it with full awareness. Like, if that's the choice of the people of Alaska, then everyone needs to know what their decisions, what's the consequences of that.
Right. And, you know, and that was, you know, when we started jumping into these big ideas, that was one of these big ideas that we're talking about is, you know, your project seemed to be looking at, are we kind of following the path of others? And what sacrifices, what are the cost of essentially keeping salmon? And in our conversation, Katie, you mentioned that it's going to be costly, in your view.
Yeah, I guess, you know, salmon are expensive, right? So I think that we have beautiful salmon runs here because there hasn't been a lot of competition for the resources that they need. And, you know, if we had the population of California that, you know, the people per square mile up here, we probably would have long ago lost our salmon. So the question is, can we continue to develop and keep them? And so, yeah, I think it's, you know, the big question is what, you know, like we all get down to, what are your core values? You know, when do you make the decision that, you know, we want salmon, even though we could make more money without salmon.
I think about this, you know, this recent ballot measure and the sort of media talking points around that, and that, you know, for many folks who are, as we've said, part of this system in some way, but are not, you know, that are living their lives and raising their kids and going to work, and all they hear is, here's my choice. I can either choose salmon or choose Alaska, you know, or I can choose, you know, economic development or saving fish, which is really not at all the right conversation to be having because it's more complex than that. But that complexity often doesn't come through in a 30-second soundbite. So that's the other piece I think it's important is that in this program and in this work, we want to be able to have really thoughtful, informed conversations about what's going on in our state, so that we can eventually find solutions that may not work for everyone, but at least are real, and thought out.
And the other big ideas that I've been hearing, at least from Donna, your project, and Katie, your project as well, and some of these other projects, is the idea of affecting change in equity. And I don't know how maybe those ideas might be fitting into your project, Donna. If remember from the earlier in the show, you were describing that your project is Salmon Park is in trying to get people to understand different perspectives. And we were talking a little bit about when I was asking about your project earlier this week about kind of equity and affecting change and kind of what that means, that it might not mean a specific change maybe.
Okay, not quite sure how to answer that, but
well, if you want to explain kind of how those ideas are fitting into your project, because that seems to be kind of a through line of all these projects, is the idea of equity within the salmon people system and affecting change. But I remember you saying that you're not really after a specific change within these conversations that you're going to try to be curating.
Well, we're still in the process of figuring out what, you know, where we're going to have these conversations and who we're going to invite to the conversations. But, you know, certainly if you look at decision making within, you know, a salmon system, it's there's not equity. There's certainly not equity. You can look at it from a number of different standpoints. And so, you know, by having conversations, hopefully people from different perspectives will gain an understanding of how decisions that are made affect people. Decisions that are made that somehow relate to salmon, whether it is an allocation issue, whether it's issuing a permit, whatever that might be, those decisions affect different people differently. And if you can have a better understanding from a very personal perspective of how those decisions are affecting people. I think it's going to change, has the potential to change the decisions that are actually made, hopefully to be more equitable.
Great. And I
was just going to add to that the voices of people that come from those different perspectives are not equitable as well. So there are people who have a louder voice, have a louder, more access to in influence. So oftentimes we can make the decisions that deeply affect parts of our community, but we don't hear about it because those folks don't necessarily have the same access or voice as others.
Sure.
So in these conversations, to be able to give voice to those folks, to be able to allow their perspectives to be heard, has the potential of moving our system to something that's more equitable.
Great. And we have just about 10 minutes left. We have two callers on the line. I do want to get through you both. So please make your questions extremely brief, as brief as you possibly can. And Steve, you are on the coffee table. Go ahead with your question.
Yeah, good morning. Kind of a comment question. I actually applied for the Hammond Fellows a couple times, wasn't able to be a part of it, though some of my art poetry was on the Salmon Shadows thing. I got real involved with the ballot measure, the Salmon Fest, a lot of things. It was really rewarding to feel the people involved, which it feels like we really need in this. Well, I wonder now, after the ballot measure, it seems more divided than ever, and politically, you know, the divide between the rural and the urban, the environmentalists and the developers. So I really think this is wonderful what you're doing. But I wonder now with the political climate statewide and otherwise and the decision, the yes or no being no, where do we go from here? Because I believe that what you're doing is the root of what we need is the people. So how do we get past the people into the arena? I guess like you're doing here, seems more divided than ever. That's my question. You sense that.
All right. Well, great. Thanks for your question. And I don't, Katie?
Yeah, I feel like it's a tough one. And, I think if there's divided feelings, and I don't think it's just one division. I think that there's many different perspectives and thought out there. And like, how are you going to break through that? And, you know, in our group of 16, we have some very different opinions. And when you sit down and talk to someone and get to know someone, you go a long way toward understanding their perspective. And when you don't meet them personally and you don't sit down with them, you spend all your time and energy building your own walls. And and I'm not saying this is the only way to do it, but it seems a lot more productive to me than just like lining up my argument over and over again and saying the same thing again and again.
Right. And Donna, did you have something to
add? Yeah, I would completely agree with that. And I think that I feel like our project is really directly related to where we are right now with these political and other types of divides where we have built up these walls and we're just like, I'm not even going to talk to that person because I don't like them and I don't like what they say. It's like, well, what if we have a better conversation where we actually bring those people together and say and ask them a question or ask them a series of questions that allow them to break down those barriers and understand that they have the same underlying values. We really have a lot of the same beliefs, but then at some point they split. And how do we have some aha moments where we can go, okay, I see where you're coming from now. How do we solve that problem together?
And we have some more callers on the line. I want to try to squeeze you guys in. We have just about 7 minutes left, but I did want to give you guys the opportunity for folks that might be interested in your projects, how they might follow your projects, if it's something, especially yours, Donna, with the community conversations, how might they find out more about that and kind of follow that?
Well, I'll just be really bold and say that you can reach out to me. My email address is donnagrace99@gmail.com. And my phone number is 907-244-4388.
And the information is on our website. So as these events start to be created and advertised, you can always go to the Alaska Humanities Forum website to get more information about how to get more involved.
Okay, great. And we have time for probably one last call. Larry, you're on the coffee table. Go ahead with your question, and please keep it as brief as you can.
Well, I'll do that. Thanks for this process. It's excellent. But there is community meetings going on here ever since statehood. We have local advisory committees. I think there's 85 in the state. The Homer Local Advisory Committee for Fishery Policy has been meeting every month and discussing the existing sustainable salmon policy, which can be found at 5 AAC 39.222. The Board of Fisheries is going to have a statewide finfish meeting in March, and the sustainable salmon policy, which was actually written by 25 salmon biologists and has been in place as amended for 15 years or so, is a hot topic of discussion. It steers away from allocation issues, so it was peaceably adopted by the Board of Fish about 2002, because the Board of Fish, after all, is a bunch of people who focus only on fish and don't make trade-offs on other political matters. And people should take a look at this policy, and everybody can suggest amendments. We have had for many years a local working group in Homer that actually helped to craft the original sustainable salmon policy. Anyway, so the local advisory committee meets every month, and this subject has been discussed the last two meetings, and that's a good place for people to go. And we should never forget that the foundation of the state, as Jay Hammond said, the very first line of his last book was, Alaska statehood all started with fish. Thank you.
Thank you. And then we might have time here for our last caller. Kimberly, you are... Oh, it looks like we lost Kimberly. I just wanted to circle back. I mean, is there anything else that would be important to add or note to this program? I know we've kind of covered a lot, and it's been kind of a winding conversation here. But, is there something that you really want listeners to kind of come away with in trying to understand this program and kind of what it's intended to do and accomplish? Did anyone want to have anything to add on that front?
I'm definitely kind of out of my element in this process. And, it's really stretching me, which is great. It's what you kind of have to, part of the application process is you really have to be open to change. And so I think that, although it might seem kind of, just like a bunch of people sitting around talking and not necessarily doing anything. Like a lot of people are like, what are you guys going to do? What are you going to do? What's the purpose of this? And, so that the actual physical outcomes of our group may not be, some big physical thing that people can see and feel. But I think you're not going to accomplish everything in 18 months. And part of our training is leadership. So we're all learning how to be more effective in what we do and work with people. But we're hoping that we're going to be able to plant some seeds. I think that's our greatest hope. And that maybe we're heading in a direction that has been easy to overlook. And maybe it'll be the key to something.
Great. And Donna, do you have something to add on?
Well, I just, for our project, one of the outcomes that we're planning to work towards is, we're only going to be able to have a few conversations as part of our process, but to actually develop a discussion guide that other people can take and use and have conversations all across the state so that the conversation can continue and hopefully just build better relationships with a variety of different people.
Well, great. Well, I want to thank all of my guests. We had Donna Adderhold, a Salmon Fellow and coordinator of the Gulf Watch Alaska program. And we had Katie Birch, a commercial fisherman, also a Salmon Fellow. And Cameron Perez Verdia, thank you for joining me as well over the phone. And you are listening to Coffee Table on KBBI AM 890 Homer.